A few moments ago, Brother David introduced us to a new song, probably new to most of you, Facing a Task Unfinished. In our hymnals, the reading that is directly after that hymn says, it's by Linda Hunt, 1983. She said, "Lord, we know the task is still unfinished, and we ask that you move the hearts of your people to respond sacrificially. Help us, each one, to hear your still small voice and know the part that we each have to play in your great commission." I am so very thankful for the ministry of Life Word, because the ministry of Life Word is a ministry that we are able to partner together with to help face that unfinished task of reaching the world with the gospel of Christ. In my lifetime, the number of languages that Life Word was reaching out to has grown from about, I think 20 was the number I remember when I was a kid, now to over 174 languages around the world. And what an amazing thing the internet has done for broadcast ministry. And we're so very thankful for that. Today, you have an opportunity to give sacrificially to help promote the ministry of Life Word. There was something that was mentioned in a post, or I heard one of our leaders mention it. I'm not sure, but I confirmed this with our speaker this morning before I came up. If you were to give $1 to Life Word Media Ministries, how many Facebook accounts do you think that $1 would have the potential to reach? Any idea? $1 of paid ads, how many people do you think that would reach? 1,000. So that's a big number, but it's about 100 times too small. The way that they have the stuff, and Brother John Dodson's in charge of this, he knows how all of this works. But for every dollar that is spent on Facebook media ads, they reach 100,000 Facebook accounts. For a $10 gift this morning, you could reach 1 million, did I do my math right? Facebook accounts. Wow. Folks, what we're doing as a church to partner together with Life Word has tremendous eternal value. And so I want to encourage you this morning to listen to this video message that we're about to watch and listen to our speaker this morning and listen to the still small voice of the Lord as he speaks to you about how you should be a part of this ministry. We are blessed this morning to have Brother Luis Ortega here as our speaker. Brother Luis, as I mentioned, is the Director of Operations for Life Word Media Ministries worldwide. They have a very small staff here in the United States and a very large staff of speakers throughout the world. And God has blessed them tremendously over the years. Now, you may or may not realize, but one of our own was a very big part of this ministry. His greatest achievement was hiring Luis Ortega. Right, Brother George? Brother George Redden served as the director of Life Word Media Ministries for 29 years. Before that, he served as the assistant director, but he was the director for 29 years. And so, Life Word has been a big part of our family's life. And I'm very thankful that Brother Luis can be here and share with us. It was 10 years ago when you were first here, sharing with us, and I thought, you know, it's time to have Brother Luis back. He works for a man that many of you know. Brother Donnie Parrish is the executive director of Life Word Media Ministries, and Brother Donnie is now going to share a message with you, and then share the promotional video for Life Word Sunday. So watch as Brother Donnie speaks to us this morning.
¿Cuántos de ustedes entendieron todos los idiomas? I'm sorry, how many of you understood all the languages that were spoken on the screen? Anybody? I know maybe Pastor Wade understood some from the Philippines a little bit. And actually, there were two different languages. And Pastor Wade and his family, when they were missionaries there in the Philippines, were very kind to our family. They actually sent a complete Filipino store to our children to set up and display. And so we've loved and appreciate the Allens and known them for quite some time. This morning I'm going to attempt to give you a report as to what LifeWord is doing, your ministry, what the Lord is doing through your ministry around the world, and then share from God's word and hopefully get you out before the Methodist to lunch. But and this morning I will be preaching to you from the ESV. And this Bible right now, it is signed by George Redden. Before this one, he signed it earlier today. I normally had the opportunity to preach from a little baby Bible, a traveling Bible, that he claimed that when he spoke Spanish, actually he was heading to Mexico on a mission trip on behalf of LifeWord, and he stopped by a Spanish-speaking church in Houston, Texas. I was about 6-7 years old, and that I came up to him and got to sign his Bible. Well, a couple years ago, he gifted that Bible to me. Well, that's a different version, and so now that's why he signed this one. So I'm going to get to still preach to you from one that Brother George has signed. But I grew up down in south of the border with a lot of idolatry, and thanks be to the Lord that he won my entire family to the Lord. And so now I get to serve you, the churches of the BMA, and to serve the Lord and what he's doing around the world. And so I count it a privilege and an honor. And so English is not my first language, and so I hope you understand that. I have been speaking it for quite some time. My wife, whom I've been married to, Lord willing, this March, 25 years, is an English teacher. And sometimes she corrects my English, so you can do that afterwards. And if you need to correct something else later, some theology as well, feel free to do that afterwards. But the English language is something that baffles me and confuses me. There are over 7,000 languages that are spoken today in the world. And I don't claim, by the way, the video said 170 languages. We recorded that message to you, Brother Wade, and to the church last month. But as you can see right here, we've added 4 languages since the recording of the video. And we're hoping that by the end of the year, we can be in 175 languages. Now, our conclusion is that if we can preach the gospel in 200 languages, that practically the entire world can understand one of these 200 languages. And then we feel that the end might come, because Matthew says that when the gospel has been preached to all the world, then the end will come, right? But back to English, and I think many people can understand English. It's one of these things that is baffling me, because I looked at a few things in your language, which is now my language, that tend to confuse me. For example, you drive on the parkway, but then you turn around and park on the driveway. Your shipments go by car, and your cargo goes by ship. And I don't have time to go into others, but I did go to the Oxford Languages and looked at a few things. So I need your help with this morning. Help me out. According to the Oxford Languages, the opposite of light is dark. The opposite of good is bad or evil. This one caught me by surprise. The opposite of generosity is You see, I'm hearing all kinds of things. Rotten, selfishness. Well, when I entered generosity, of course, if you enter generous, something else comes about. But generosity, what it gives is meanness. And I thought, I took that for a second and I wondered, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not mean. Whoa, but am I generous? Or do I have a heart of generosity? And I'll come back to that one in a little bit. The opposite of peace is war. And it would seem natural that the opposite of love is hate. However, may I submit to you that the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is actually indifference. You see, here's the reason for that. Love is fueled by emotions and by actions, activity, by passion. But so is hate. Hate can fuel wars. It's also motivated by passion and actions and movement and activity and whatnot. But indifference is not only a lack of interest or concern or sympathy or even empathy, but perhaps a love that has grown cold, stale, and maybe even has died. Again, love and hate both can fuel wars. Indifference does absolutely nothing. Lately, also, just as a side note, in my mind, I've been comparing, contrasting, evaluating two different words. Because Paul in the Bible talks about the art of contentment. But then I've been looking at the word of complacency. And when you compare and contrast those, many Christians are complacent with where they find themselves and how much theology they know, how much they do for the Lord, or even how much they give to the various things. And they're complacent. Different than, again, the art of contentment. And maybe I'll touch back on that a little bit. But back to the wars and things. Today, people are fueled by so many things. So many. Both good and evil. And many of those differences cause all kinds of wars. We don't have to go far. Actually, it's been about 20 years since I've actually watched the news themselves. I get my news in different ways. But you can see what's going on in our world today. Love can fuel wars, but hate can fuel wars as well. And wars can be categorized in various ways, including by their scope, by their nature, by the means of combat. And some of the common ones that we know are conventional warfare, guerrilla warfare, civil war, proxy war, cyber warfare, Cold War, just to name a few. And of course, even if we were to categorize them by the means of combat, I mentioned cyber warfare, we have chemical warfare, biological warfare, and there are others. But did you know that in 2025, this is the year we find ourselves in, there are currently 44 ongoing armed conflicts in the world? We hear about certain specific wars, but some of these have been ongoing for decades and years. Just a little glimpse. I'm not going to dwell too much on that. Of these 44 wars that are going on in our world today, six of them have claimed over 100,000 deaths. 10 of those have claimed about 10,000 deaths apiece. And if you actually take the sum of the 44 wars that are going on in our world, this year alone, they've claimed about 172,000 lives. That's a big number. That's this year alone. But here's what's crazy. There's a statistic that tells us that somebody dies every 2 seconds. I'm not a mathematician, but in the hour that we will be here, about 7,000 people will die. If you multiply that for by the day, about 170 or so thousand people will die today without hearing the gospel. Now let that sink in for a second. Yes, wars have claimed so many lives. But right now, just today, that many people will die without knowing peace, without knowing the gospel, without knowing the love of Christ for them. But as a country, which by the way I love, this is my home country, I am a naturalized citizen. I have a brother that has served this country in various wars. But this country alone currently is involved in 7 different military engagements. And I'm not going to dwell on those, but there's the Yemeni, the Somali, the Syrian civil war, the Gaza war, the Israel-Hezbollah conflict, which of course we've been hearing about the peace and possibilities there. And I don't have the time this morning to tell you about the one time that LifeWord sent me over to Lebanon, and I find myself with an army tank right here in my face, surrounded by men with AK-47s and M16s, but yet feeling at peace, saying, Lord, if this is my time, I know I'm in the middle of your will. But here's what's crazy. In 2025, the global military spending hit a record high. $2.718 trillion, so nearly $3 trillion. That's a number that my little brain can't comprehend. So just to make it easy, $3 trillion. This country, which by the way, has spent 1/3 of that. So we've spent as a country $1 trillion. So the highest of any country of all. But do you know why we're spending this? And I'm not saying or suggesting that we shouldn't. Here's where I'm going with this. All these attempts of every country investing is an attempt to bring about peace. An attempt to bring about peace. But let me turn our attention from those physical wars to another war that is raging for mankind's souls. It is a spiritual war, both fueled by love, the love of God, the love of the Son, but also fueled by hate, by Satan and his entourage. And this type of war has also been going on for quite some time. And yet there are many believers that stand by with indifference, saying, you know what, I'm complacent, I'm content, or depending on which side you're looking at it, and say, you know what, I've got my ticket to heaven. I don't care who else dies or goes to heaven or not. I've got my ticket. You know, this type of war has also claimed so many deaths around the world for many years. My family and I attempt to read a chapter a night from different missionary books. In fact, as a family, we invested several thousand dollars just in missionary books so that we could devour one on a regular basis. And so as a family, we sit and read about these. We've read about the Elliots that went down to South America, that the very people that killed the husbands, the wives said, we're going to go and take our children and tell them about Jesus Christ. And folks like William Carey and many others, Hudson Taylor. But one that has impacted my life the most here recently is a guy by the name of Adoniram Judson. Now, he grew up as a Congregationalist, and then he turned his back on God for a while. He ran from God, and he ran with a guy who was an atheist, and in fact, he himself thought to have become an atheist. And while he was running from God, he thought he was going to make it big doing all kinds of other things, and he didn't. He slept in flea-infested mattresses and places and hard life when he was running from God. Of course, missionaries have been known to do that as well. But when he was running from God, one day, he was tired. He needed a place to stay. He came across an inn, and it was packed. There was no room. But he begged the innkeeper, please, you don't understand. I can sleep anywhere. I'm tired. I'm wet. I just need somewhere to lay down. And he says, there is no room. Anything will do. Well, I've got a room where there's a dying man, and I'm having to check on him on a regular basis. If you don't mind that, I'll take it. I'll sleep through anything. And Adoniram Judson lay down to sleep, and he couldn't sleep. Because the question that haunted him that night, that evening, is what's going to become, what's going to happen to the soul of that man next door? And next door meant he was just split, divided by them, their beds, by a sheet, a curtain. And he didn't know the man, at least he didn't think he did. And that man moaned and groaned all night into the wee hours of the morning. And early in the morning, Adoniram managed to catch just a couple of Z's there. And then when he made it to the breakfast, practically everybody was gone. And the innkeeper served him a little oatmeal. But as before he took it to his mouth, he asked the innkeeper, what came of that man that was dying last night? Well, he passed away this morning. Any chance you knew who he was? And when he told them the name, Eames, he about lost it. Because the man next door that died next to Adoniram Judson was actually his best friend, whom he had ran around with most of his running from God days. And he was an atheist. And Adoniram never shared the gospel with him. And that sent him for a spin. And that was the pivot point where his life started changing. And he committed his life to the mission work. And then he married. And then another of his friends married. And these two couples set off as missionaries to Burma, Myanmar. But on the way, and on one of the ships, this wife of this young man got pregnant. And then she lost a baby on that boat. And then she died. And then Adoniram and his wife, when they arrived at Burma, by then, his wife had been pregnant as well. And not too long after they arrived in Burma, Myanmar, the baby died. But actually, before Adoniram even went to the mission field, his sister had died. And many other deaths. Actually, where they landed, they stayed with, in Burma, with the son of William Carey, a missionary as well. And that gave William Carey, the son, an opportunity to move to a different place to be a missionary. But on that trek, there was a shipwreck, and William Carey's son lost his wife and all of his children. And then he just went crazy, wandering through the wilderness of Burma, in a sense. There were lots of deaths during this time. Judson himself was tortured and mistreated and hung upside down in prisons, often with decaying bodies and stench and filth and often hungry and whatnot. But Judson, Adoniram Judson, managed to translate the Bible into the Burmese language, which happens to be right now one of the languages that Lifeword broadcasts the gospel. So here's a letter from our missionary in Burma that is a direct result, of course, of missionary work that continues there. And this is what Brother Rama says. In Myanmar, of course, tucked between mountains and borders, people from all walks of life, one sermon of Brother Rama, for example, reached 4.2 million. Of those 4.2 million, 23,400 turned around and shared the gospel with others. Which, by the way, on the LifeWord Cloud, if you don't speak other than English or just English, you can go there and find gospel presentations and you can share it with other people that speak different languages straight from there. But out of those 23,000 plus, 6,400 responded in some form or fashion to that one gospel presentation. And here's just a brief sampling of that. One Buddhist man wrote with an honest question, "If I become a Christian, should I be then baptized?" And of course, his words reveal a heart already stirred and wrestling with what it means to follow Jesus. Another person shared joyfully, "By listening to the gospel you preach, I came to understand the saving grace of Jesus Christ. Thank you very much, Pastor, for sharing the gospel." And I've got a long list of those if you would like to hear about those. But even in the video that you watched, there was a man speaking in the Idoma language in Nigeria. Nigeria, we also do Yoruba. Nigeria, at one time in the history of Christianity, was known as the white man's graveyard. Do you know why? A husband and a wife and their children would say, "We want to go as missionaries and tell the people of Nigeria about Jesus Christ." So before leaving, they would hug tight their loved ones and they would kiss them and say their goodbyes. And as they packed their belongings, they would pack them in the very coffins that they knew that in less than 2 years, the entire family would be shipped back home because they would die of some disease in less than 2 years. Yet during that time, there was no shortage of missionaries. And I'm happy to submit to you that through our partnership, we continue to preach the gospel to the Nigerians in the Idoma language, in the Yoruba language. And so I want to thank you for partnering with LifeWord. But I gave you earlier the statistic that as a nation, we have invested $1 trillion in attempts to bring about peace. Worldwide, nearly $3 trillion. Yet, Christians worldwide are investing only $52 billion annually on global missions efforts. In other words, according to the Gospel Coalition, that equates to 0.09% of Christians' annual income. So we're spending of our income nearly 1.7% into bring about peace in wars, but 0.09% in what will truly bring about peace, when people know and hear about Jesus Christ and what he has done for people around the world. And of that 0.09% that is being invested in missions around the world, a small fraction of that is being spent in largely already evangelized countries. But yet LifeWord continues to reach the unreached, the people groups, the last and the least, thanks to your generosity as you allow the Lord to lead you in your passion for lost souls. So I'm not going to dwell on this too long, but I know that you give, and I have a quick report of what you have been given, and so we thank you for that. And it might range on any given Sunday from $100 to sometimes a couple of hundred to 700 to 1700 to 1300 and so on and so forth. And so thank you, thank you, thank you for what you're doing for LifeWord and we as we partner together. Last month, we turned 60 years of being in the ministry. And of course, Brother George Redden led us through about half of that. And so we're thankful for his leadership. And then Brother Steve Crawley and now Brother Donnie Parrish leading us in this. And so my challenge this morning, would you consider maybe giving a dollar for each of the years that we have been in the ministry as a family? Perhaps. Did you know that there's a statistic that also says that if you make $50,000 a year, you're on the top 1% of the world's most affluent, the richest in the world. Yeah, the ultra rich, they make a fraction of that 1%. So in other words, there's 8 billion people in the world, and if we were to line them up, 100% of the people, you're standing in position number one, and you look behind you, there's 99 people that are worse off than you are. But briefly, as I wrap up this part, and then because I have a message to share, allow me to give you a glimpse into our efforts as to what your contributions are doing. So we've added 4 languages since the video. So this year, we've added 9 languages. So we pray that by the end of the year, it will be 10 languages to be at 175. The discipleship process that we have now in English. We've launched it in Spanish. Hopefully by the end of this month, we will launch it in Ukrainian and followed by Arabic. And by the way, Ukrainian is part of the Slavic people groups. And recently, we have received a Macedonian call. Because actually, the Slavic languages are part of the Macedonian area. And we're broadcasting the gospel to the Russians and to the Ukrainians that tend to be fighting with each other. Yet we have churches here in the U.S. where Ukrainians and Russians are worshiping together. And so they've asked us to come alongside and help produce more content to reach both sides with the gospel. And so that might be something that might interest you, or helping us translate this discipleship process into other languages. This year, we're launching a new initiative, hopefully by the end of the year, if not at the first of the year. And we are launching a children's show. We've never produced any children's programming, but there's a statistic or a window that's called the 414 window, like the 440 window, that most people have come to know the Lord during the ages of 4 and 14. And if we were to do this today, how many of you were saved during that time? So we want to focus in this area to reach this demographic, the children's area. And that might be something that interests you, and to invest in this area. And of course, we're using artificial intelligence in various ways and whatnot. And so, but here's what we've added recently. The Gujarati language. Can anybody help me and tell me where that's from? That's in India. That's a people group. The Lord loves them, by the way. The Kinaraya language. That's in the Philippines. The Simane Ignaciano, the Siriono. These are languages in Bolivia. We've added the Dari Farsi language. There's the Persian, Farsi. There's variations of these. But the Dari language is actually the language that was spoken by King Darius in the Bible. This is in Afghanistan. And this young man, there's actually a big population of Afghanis now in the Dallas area. So we've partnered to take the gospel. We're not showing his face, because as soon as they recognize him, he's toast. But he still wants to go back, and he's making those plans to head back to Afghanistan to share the gospel there. So that might be something that you want to partner with us. But the reason we do all this is because we have a God who loves us, and he gave his son, and he wants everyone to know him. In fact, back in Genesis chapter 12, we learned that his desire is to bless every single family in the world. In fact, he appeared to a man by the name of Abraham, and he told him, I want to make you a great man. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make you great. I'm going to give you lands. I'm going to give you children. I'm going to give you all that you need, because I have a plan. I have a purpose. And I'm going to make it happen through your lineage. And I'm going to bring about the greatest blessing that the world has ever known. And by the way, we know him as Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. So we serve a God who is a promise keeper. And we can trust him, because He does good on his promises. So this morning, I would like to turn our attention just for a few moments on God's promises, God's presence, God's protection, God's provision, and God's providence. So when we look at these, and we're going to be in Genesis 28, if you want to start turning there. In Genesis 28, this reminds us that God is faithful and trustworthy even when we are faithless. He is faithful when you and I might be faithless. So we can trust him. We can trust his promises, his plans, his presence, his protection, his provision, and his providence. So there in Genesis 28, I'm going to give you a brief context. We'll start there in verse 11 or 12, around there, of 28. Jacob finds himself in Bethel. At this moment, he is fleeing from his brother Esau. He's fearful, not only fleeing, he's fearful that his brother is about to kill him. He's vowed to kill him because Esau says, "You've stolen my birthright." Well, we know the story. Esau was starving, and he says, "My birthright will do me no good if I die. So I'll sell it to you. Give me some food. I'm starving." But Isaac has already blessed Jacob, but Esau says, "I'm going to kill you." So he's fleeing. Jacob finds himself in Bethel. He's fleeing. He's fearful, and he's a flawed man. But God's going to use him. He had promised that to Isaac, and God had promised that to Abraham as well. So this morning, just briefly, we're going to look at five powerful truths from Jacob's encounter with God, or should I say God's encounter with Jacob. So the first one we're going to look at is God's promises. So let's start there in verse 12. "And he dreamed," Jacob, "and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and at the top of it, it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, 'I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust on the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all..." Let me emphasize that right there. "And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Verse 15, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go." That's where we're going to see God's presence. And we just heard his promise. And God is not only emphasizing and reminding Jacob, but just saying, "I said this to your father and your grandfather. I promised it, and I am here confirming it, affirming it, and reaffirming it to you." So here's what he says then in verse 15. "Behold, I am with you." There's God's presence. "And I will keep you." We will see there God's protection wherever you go. "And will bring you back to this land." We'll see God's providence there. "For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." Let's pause there for a second. So Jacob again is fearful, he's fleeing, he's flawed, and despite of Jacob's deceit, God is going to reaffirm, affirm, and confirm his promise. We heard it. And one thing that I learned from this is that God's covenant and his faithfulness goes beyond human failure. You and I are flawed. None of us is perfect. But God chose to use men and women along the history of missions and Christianity and from the inception. Abraham was not perfect. He lied about his wife. He said, "That's my sister." And God blessed him. And God didn't bless him because he lied. God blessed him because God is faithful to his promises. Then Isaac lied about his wife. And again, now Jacob was deceitful, and he's treated that way in various occasions. Of course, his father-in-law is going to be very deceitful. But one thing that I learned from all this is also that God's promises are rooted in his grace, not our merit. When Paul is writing to the church at Rome, in chapter 9, verses 10 through 12, he tells them this. And not only this, but when Rebekah had also conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, and he goes and tells them that the children had not been born yet, neither had they done good or evil, but that the purpose of God according to the election might stand, not of works, but of him who calleth. And it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. In other words, God chose Jacob for a specific task and purpose to bring about salvation through Jesus Christ through him. And so here's one thing that I learned also. To Jacob, God is saying, I'm going to give you, here's the promise of land, of descendants, and a blessing, but ultimately, I'm going to bring about Jesus Christ, the Savior. So God's promises are unshakable, even when you and I stumble, when we're not perfect, when we don't do what's right. Jacob didn't always do what was right. Isaac didn't always do what was right. Neither did Abraham. In fact, there was a time that Isaac was starving, and he says, I'm going to go to Egypt because I'm going to die. And God told him, no, I need you to stay put. In fact, I want you to go and live amongst the Philistines. Lord, are you sure? They're going to kill me. If I don't starve, they're going to kill me. I want to show you that I'm faithful to my promises. You can trust me. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to bless you. And actually, Isaac had more than the Philistines had. They got jealous. They shut down his wells and ran them off multiple times. But every place he opened up a well, God blessed them. God's faithful to his promises. So this is where God affirms and confirms and reaffirms his promises and his plan to Jacob. But here's what happens in the next verses. Of course, here in this verse, Jacob says, surely the Lord is in this place. He didn't know it. Why? Jacob and his ancestors had often thought that God was limited to specific places. But what Jacob is learning here is that God is omnipresent. He's everywhere, not limited to where there's an altar or a temple or a place that has been considered holy. And Jacob's ladder, his vision, points to Christ as the bridge. Christ standing at the top, at the head, connecting heaven and earth, this ladder. And of course, we know in John that the Bible tells us that Jesus Christ says that he is the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through Jesus. John in 1:51 quotes that he sees the Son of Man, basically, and angels ascending and descending, and Jesus standing, the Son of Man descending as well. But one thing that this teaches me is that where God is, that's a holy place. And God shows up in unexpected places. In fact, in the previous chapter of Genesis, Rebekah had gone seeking for a specific place to seek for the Lord's will because she felt that she could meet him over there. But what God is telling Jacob, I'm everywhere. I'm omniscient. I'm omnipresent. I'm omnipotent. I'm all powerful. I'm omnibenevolent. I'm all good. But surely the Lord is in this place. So where God reveals himself, that place becomes holy. You remember when Moses is, hey, Moses, take your sandals off because where you're standing is holy ground. Well, where God is, that place is holy. God doesn't go around looking for a holy place to show up. Where he shows up, that becomes holy. So where God reveals himself becomes holy ground. When he shows up in our lives, he sanctifies us. He makes us holy. And of course, I'm thankful that he has justified us. He is sanctifying us, and one day he will glorify us. And I'm looking forward to that day. But the Lord is not limited to one place. We're never alone, is what he's going to tell them here in a second. His presence transforms any ordinary place into a sacred encounter. Any ordinary person into a holy person if you invite him. The next point here is that he's going to tell them, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to provide protection. I am with you and will watch over you, is what he told them already there in the previous verses that we read. But I'll read 15 again. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. So I am with you. My presence is with you. But I'm going to keep you. I'm going to protect you wherever you go. I didn't ask you to go back to where you came from. In fact, I had asked your family to leave that place. But because I'm true to my promises, you can trust me, I'm going to take care of you wherever you go. Christian, do you know that you and I have the same promise? We have the promise in Matthew that if we make disciples, he's promised to be with us until the end of the world, to the end of the ages. In fact, God's promise to protect Jacob wherever he goes is one of those that is later echoed to Moses and Joshua and many others and to all believers and to us today. In fact, the author of Hebrews in chapter 13, verse 5, he says, Christians, believers, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as ye have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. So in other words, not just physical safety to Jacob is promised, but there's a divine commitment to fulfill his plan, his purposes, in his timing. May 28th, this summer, end of the summer, my wife and kids and I were traveling to visit a church, to preach at a church in Knoxville, Tennessee, then to preach at a church in New Jersey, and then one in New York. But we didn't make it to our first appointment. We were an hour and a half away from our house. There was a big storm coming across the country, which claimed about 11 lives that day. And we found ourselves turned our vehicle upside down in a ditch, filling up with water quickly, totaled the car. But the Lord allowed myself, my wife, and our four children to walk away without one single scratch. Now, what do I learn from that? If I'm still alive, he's not done with me. If he has you alive, he's not done with you. He still wants to use you. God was not done with Jacob. And even though he was fearful and flawed and fleeing, I'm not done with you. I have a plan and a purpose, and I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to bring about this plan. You will have my presence. I'm going to protect you because I have not done that which I said I was going to do. So God's protection ensures his purposes are fulfilled. But when he's done with us, he'll take us home. And just for the sake of time, let's jump to verse 20. And let's read those. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me, if God, and here in our language, it doesn't mean, God, if you hold the end of your bargain, then I will do this. What Jacob is saying here, God, you've just shown me that you're not only wanting to be my God, but you were the God of my father, and you are the God of my grandfather. So you are omnipresent, omnipotent, you're eternal, you're omniscient, you're omnibenevolent. So let's read it with that in mind. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, since God will be with me, that's a guarantee, and since God will keep me in this way that I go, because he's already affirmed and confirmed and reaffirmed, I will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, This is where we see the provisions. He's promised that. So that I come again to my Father's house in peace. We see God's providence there. Then the Lord shall be my God. And this then, I interpret it to be right now. I am making the decision that God, you're not only going to be the God of Isaac and the God of Abraham, you're going to be the God of Jacob starting now. Not then when I come back and you bring me back and you fulfill all this, because I believe you right now. You're going to give me bread. You're going to give me clothes. You're going to take care of me. I'm going to make a vow. And so here's the vow that he makes. Not only then the Lord shall be my God, verse 22, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. A full tenth to you. So one thing that I learned from this is that provision is not necessarily abundance. Even though God said to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, I'm going to bless you greatly, abundantly. Hey, as Americans, we're blessed abundantly as well in the provisions area. But to me, provision is not necessarily abundance, but sufficiency. When Paul wrote to the Philippians in 4:19, he says, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. And we often also have our wants. So tithing flows from a heart of gratitude, not legalism. So I might say to you, let us trust God for our daily needs, and let us respond in generosity. You remember when Jesus and his disciples, and they're watching, and here some rich people giving what's left over and what they don't want or need, and then there's that little lady that gives a coin or two, or in fact, who gave the most? She did. Why? Because she gave it all. I would venture to say that none of us here, I'm pointing to myself as well, might consider giving it all. But you know what? God first wants our heart and our devotion and our passion and our love and our commitment to him before anything else. So since I'm out of time, I'm going to wrap up the last few points and combine them. But we see God's providence here, orchestrating redemption through imperfect people, then and still now, using people like you and I. God works through Jacob's failures and fears. He brings them back, makes a great nation. Judah, Jesus, here we are. And of course, we learn from Malachi and Romans that God used Jacob for a specific special task by his sovereign purpose. And we don't have time to talk about that. But in my own words, providence means God weaves his plan through human weaknesses. So God uses flawed people like you and I to advance his redemptive mission. And I'm thankful for that. So I'm done. God's promises, presence, protection, provision, and providence. We see it here in this passage. But when Paul was writing to the Thessalonians as well in 1 Thessalonians 5, 24, he who calls you is faithful. He will surely do it. Faithful is he that calleth you, who also will do it. So here's my challenge to you as I'm done. Let us trust his promises. Let us rest in his presence daily. Let us walk in his protection. Let us depend on his provision. And let us surrender to his providence, and may he use us for his honor and glory. Thank you for loving LifeWord and loving the least and the last. God bless you.